The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. Welcome to Comics League International, episode 23. With me today, my boon companion, Derek.
I am your companion, Brent.
Boon companion, sir. Boon companion.
Yes.
Or not, maybe. I don't know. So we're going to try something a little different today, and maybe next week as well, depending on how much we get recorded and how much... And where I decide to put the episode break. But rather than discussing a comic storyline, we're going to try and do a commentary. Yeah.
Interesting.
I know. So Derek and I, we're going to watch this little known movie. Most people haven't heard of it, called the art house film,
if you will.
Called the X-Men, I believe is the pronunciation. Yeah, we're watching X-Men. The 2000 X-Men. They came out. Which really, you know, I was gonna say this brought the X-Men to the world, but let's be honest, that was the animated series that came out much earlier. Was what really launched X-Men to the forefront. But, you know, this movie, I guess, launched X-Men in black leather to the world. Yeah, overall, what were your... Do you remember any thoughts when you first saw X-Men?
I remember that when it first came out, that I was excited because I liked Bryan Singer, the director. Like, yeah, I really liked... Like Usual Suspects is still one of my favorite movies.
Yeah,
and After Pupil is also good.
I've never seen
that. And so I was pretty excited about an actual good director being able to work on a comic book film. And I actually like this movie. Like, it has problems, shall we say?
Yeah,
and we will point them out as we go. I enjoy it. Like, I kind of view this as like the pilot episode for his X-Men universe, where he was still kind of got some things that worked and some things that didn't, but ultimately it led to X2, which I really liked.
Yeah,
so I forgave, I kind of forgave a lot of this film's problems retroactively. But honestly, it's been a while since I've watched it all the way through, so I may be like, oh yeah, I do remember hating this, or I do remember really loving this now all of a sudden. So yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, I am too. I haven't watched this. It's been a few years, and a lot of the issues I had with it and I'm kind of with Derek. Like, overall, there's some really enjoyable parts to this movie. I think the fact that I'm an X-Man. I don't even know if I can call myself a fanboy anymore. Like, I think the Claremont run of X-Men are some of the greatest comics ever. My personal X-Men chronology ends right after Executioner Song. And since then, nothing has really recaptured the X-joy that I found from those comics. So now I just kind of pick and mutter and go, Framina. Although I still have, there's still some stuff I enjoy out there. But, yeah.
I'm nowhere near that specific. I was much more like, yeah, X-Men, mutants. I know the basic storylines, but I've never really followed it that closely. I know who these characters are, but I'm willing to just kind of see what happens. So I was much easier to please than you were.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like I said, this is a commentary. The movie itself runs an hour and 44 minutes because we're basically taking a look at the extended version. Because I remember the when it first came out, I want to say it was only like 89 minutes or something. I just remember that because
short.
Yeah, and I think they've added in some cut scenes to be like, oh, Storm had like three lines. We should give her something. But so we're watching the extended version. We're probably going to chop this episode in two because of length, because no one wants to listen to an hour and 44 minutes of us being us.
We'll give you regular signposts of where we are in the movie, so it'll be easy to sync up and know where we are.
But, you know, before we start off, why don't we go ahead and do what we do at the end of the show and tell where we can be found here, and we'll probably do it again at the end of the movie so it fits up over the two episodes. I'm not going to edit any of this part out because this is a learning experience for us all.
Yeah, watch us stumble and learn and grow.
I know. Is it? Just think we're baby giraffes. Really. It makes us much more adorable. I'm picturing us, a giraffe with our faces on it, and it's wonderful. So, Derek, internets, where are you at?
Okay, my name is Derek Adams, and I can be found at spell-sword.com or at gderekadams at Twitter.
Ooh.
Whichever. Find me there. I dare you. I dare you to find me.
Yep. And I am Brent Thomas. You can find me at deadlytroubadour.com. Or you can find me, recently started Twitter, but since Deadly Troubadour is too many letters, I'm Dead Troubadour on Twitter. So at Dead Troubadour, which is fun in its own way, a little different meaning. And you can also find me online reading at the podcast Reading Deadly Troubadours and on the Living Japan podcast. All those are available to iTunes. Please like me. Please tell your friends. So that's us. Why don't we get this movie started so we can kind of...
Start the movie!
I'm going to start it!
Start the movie!
I'm starting it. The movie is starting now. It's clicking off. The screen's black. 20th
don't
Century
Fox. Don't leave the arrow on the movie, Philistine.
Oh, well, I mean... Well, yeah, no. It's a movie.
Okay, if you're turning on the movie now, we're seeing the 20th Century Fox. There's drums. We're feeling a surge of excitement. Turned on the wrong movie. We don't know.
Yeah, it could be. Now, this... I remember really liking this opening bit. The Professor Xavier...
From Dr. X?
Yep. Or, you know, I mean, this... It's kind of fun watching it now because this could almost be a Star Trek Next Generation intro. Like space mutation. I can't do a Picard. We're going to go somewhere and look, crazy space, we're flying through DNA.
Was this before or after the first Spider-Man?
This was before? I think Spider-Man came out in 2001.
Yeah, I just remember that this intro, the first Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, had a very similar intro, just a different color scheme.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure this came out first. If only there was some magic device in my phone. Now, this was the opening scenes where we have Magneto in the concentration camps. Very powerful stuff.
Yeah, I really liked grounding it in that context. Mm. Like, putting it right forefront, and it's about, you know, it's about racism. That's what X-Men is about.
Yeah.
You know, just putting it right up front, day one, shot one.
Yeah.
I like that. And it's just well shot. It's just a good scene.
Yeah. Now, I can't remember if in the comics how clearly spoken it was at this time about Magneto's past. Now, I know it had been strongly hinted at in definitely some scenes. There's a great, like some great comics where Magneto is supposed to, you know, plot to team up with the Red Skull, but it was just a scheme to get Magneto to try and kick the crap out of Red Skull. And some Wolverine comics when they were done by John Byrne, where it's just Magneto being like, oh, you're a former Nazi. You worked here. And it is strongly implied that Magneto took this frail old man who was covered in a mechanical skeleton and crunched the shit out of him. Mm. It's very well done.
Yeah, this scene, except for when Eric Lenscher uses his powers at the end of the scene to bend the bars, this scene could almost be in a totally different movie.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's kind of what makes it effective in it, mm-hmm. is that there seems to be maybe a little bit less now, but like not knowing what to do with comic book movies. And certainly in this point of, you know, if they were comic booky, they had to make them comic booky. And this might be one of the first times we see a very clear comic book movie do something this powerful.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they first started making comic book movies, a lot of their context was like Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
And the Tim Burton Batman movies.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was nice to see something that was grounded in reality without it being, you know, just uber grim.
Mm-hmm.
But having a nice...
As they've become. Yes, because nothing says not uber grim like starting off in the Holocaust. I mean, really. Yeah. That's
pleasant. But now we're here. We're in Mississippi.
Yay. People are playing piano. Now, I've always wondered why they went with... why they basically replaced Kitty Pryde with Rogue.
You know, I don't know. It's an interesting choice. Because in my mind, Rogue, I've never thought of Rogue as a teenager. You know?
Yeah.
Like, she's always the older version, you know, stealing her powers from Miss Marvel. And I've always thought of her as the much older version. So, this was, I guess, like, I kind of accepted it when the movie came out. But I guess just because her powers allow themselves to be more... plot monkeys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, admittedly, in the later X-Men movie, the future Days of Future Past, where all of a sudden Kitty Pryde gets time travel powers or something.
I still haven't watched that one.
Oh.
I hear it's okay.
She gets weird, non-specific time travel powers. Spoiler.
Oh, no. Yeah. And, I mean, with this... Oh, we've got the boyfriend fallen... see, I always thought of Rogue. Rogue was an interesting character, I thought, because when she first joined the X-Men, I think you could argue that she could be like late teens, early 20s, maybe. But she was basically, she was the screw-up kid, you know?
Yeah.
She was a minor league villain who, then... when she absorbed Ms. Marvel's powers and psyche went a little crazy and needed the X-Men to help. But she was never a collected, innocent teenager in the way they're presenting here. That's Kitty Pryde.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's it. Just it, like her powers lend themselves to more plot mechanics.
Yeah.
Where ultimately Kitty Pryde is like, I can walk through walls. You know?
Yeah.
You have to actually write her as a character to make her... And that's not always what people want to do when they're writing a blockbuster superhero film.
Character? Get that out of here. Now, one of my favorite parts of this movie is Bruce Davison as Senator Kelly.
Yeah, he's great in this part.
Oh, man, it's wonderful. I remember, because after this came out, he suddenly got a lot more work. I just remember, like, anything he was in was suddenly somehow tied in my head to him hating mutants. You know? he's the overprotective father of some girl who's dating a neighborhood boy. He's like, because he's a mutant! It was the fun
game. Do you remember those viral campaign ads they made for him?
Oh,
like,
man.
Vote for Senator Kelly than they aired on actual TV.
A little, yeah.
Yeah, those were kind of neat. Like, and I'd never really seen anything like that before, so I thought that was just super cool.
Man. So this was in 2000. So
I'm surprised how dated Famke Janssen's hair looks. Come on, girl.
That bright
what you doing that Ally McBeal nonsense? It's not you. That's not you, girl.
That hairstyle needs to come back. Don't lie. Especially Patrick Stewart's hairstyle. Yeah, Patrick Stewart. Everyone knows this, but just in case, Jim Lee. There you go. That was who Jim Lee is commonly, you know, said that he used Patrick Stewart as his model for Professor X when Jim Lee was writing the X-Men or drawing the X-Men. Which is why it was always kind of like spot on the nose. But I mean, it's really any time you put Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, nerds, in a room together, like, it's just gold.
Yeah, you've seen all the stuff about their epic love affair with each other.
Yeah,
it makes me so happy. Every time I see them, like when they were doing Waiting for Godot up in New York, they would just go around, just hang out, holding hands, taking pictures, having a great time. I was like, man, they're so cool.
Yeah. Now, do you know, like, because I see their romance photos, and I mean, I know about Ian McKellen being gay. I'm not is Patrick Stewart, do we know?
No, Patrick Stewart's married to like a 35-year-old woman.
Yeah, because I was actually
no, he's like they're just like best friends, and he doesn't care, because which I think is wonderful.
Yeah, like, no,
they're just besties for life.
Like, I was just wondering when I was watching that, like, I was like, I wonder what, you know, Ian McKellen's partner kind of feels about that bromance there. If he's like, so what are you doing? Hang out with Patrick and I can't come? No, you go hang out with Patrick Stewart. I'll stay home doing whatever the husband of Ian McKellen does off having an awesome time with Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, it just seems like they're just besties, and it makes me so happy.
Yeah. I wonder if the in First Class, if they patterned that friendship bestie duo on the actual activities of Stuart McKellen.
I don't know. I like those two. I like McAvoy and what's his bucket?
Fassbender.
Yeah, I really like them. And honestly, Days of Future Past is fun. You'll like it. Like, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and right now on screen, we have our first. Oh, look, he's drinking, and he's sexy.
Remember how worried you were when they cast him and he was like too tall? Like you were like, you went on a tear about it.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what? As good as he is, I think I was right.
He is too tall.
You know,
but they went to great lengths in this scene alone. Like, he starts out and he's all hunched over. And they're always shooting him from down low. They try to hide how tall he is in this shot.
Yeah.
And for a non-comic book fan, this is a really good introduction to Wolverine.
It is. I mean, well, even for comic book fans, other than the size thing, I think it's a really good introduction. Because what was the movie he did like right before? It's like Kate and Leopold?
Yeah, and he was also in Oklahoma.
Oh, was he?
On Broadway. Yeah, he played Curly in Oklahoma. Like, he still had his hair permed when he auditioned.
Awesome. Yeah, this is one of the scenes in the bar where I think they just got right. I can't even argue with it, you know? Everything
about it. Yeah, Logan is just a natural habitat. Like, this is very good.
You know, and they're kind of like, oh, is she going to steal? What's going on? But there's just... Oh, poor Anna Paquin. Before she got seduced by vampires and instead was seduced, not really, by an overgrown weasel that is Wolverine.
Yeah. Also, see the way they're shooting, she looks taller than he is because they put him further down the bar.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can tell they thought, you know, in the later movies they didn't care. But in this movie they did some stuff to kind of calm the fanboys down.
Yeah, you can see it a little bit in there where they're kind of...
Just a little. They do a little to hide how tall he is. Because he's 6'2". He's super tall.
Yeah,
he's tall. With that hair, he's like 6'4".
He is 11 inches at least more than Wolverine, who in the comics is 5'3", which they've also forgotten about.
Yeah.
I mean, not that
I don't care about that anymore.
Not that I am a nerd who knows Wolverine's height.
Off the top of your head or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be weird.
5'3".
It wouldn't be great if all of a sudden in the comics, like, there's some sort of, like, cryopod opens or something, and out of it comes the Chris Claremont Wolverine. There's that, like, spark plug with the horrible sideburns and the ugly face.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Like, who's this imposter? He just chases down all the other Wolverine clones.
Oh, that would be great. If they basically did, like, what they did when Jean Grey died as Phoenix... And brought him back and was like, that was a Wolverine. That was a cosmic entity who was cosmic. You know.
What was the period of Marvel that we decided anything we liked, didn't like, was a drunk Skrull?
I think that's... Wow, then that means really nothing has happened in the Marvel Universe in the past 10 years.
A very long time.
Hey, what's up? What's happened?
Oh, yeah, but this movie that we're watching...
you know, no, I mean,
like
I was...
That she's wearing. It's very nice. It's sparkly. It's red.
You know what this reminds me of? My so-called life.
Really.
It's kind of like Angela Chase just suddenly was like, Jordan Catalano, I'm sick of your shit. I'm going to Alaska. Ooh, he looks kind of like Jordan Catalano if he didn't shave. And smoke cigars.
Okay.
You know. I don't know. There's something about this era of Anna Paquin and a young... Claire Danes, they just kind of, they reminisce of each other.
Okay.
I know that's not how you're supposed to use the word, but screw it, it's my podcast. I can...
Whatever.
Get off Whatever my back, Derek.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's all totally fine.
I never really saw Wolverine as an RV camper type of guy, though. I'll be honest. It's a little, I think he just robbed someone's granddad.
Yeah, I personally always just thought he just walked out and just grabbed the first thing he saw with wheels.
And
even though he does have a motorcycle in the back, so I think we're supposed to think this is his. Yeah. This is his.
And with Rogue asleep in the wagon there, it would have been a much different movie if she had already frozen to death.
Much shorter movie.
No. Oh, goodness, now I'm going to have to bury another teenage girl who decided to follow me into the wilderness.
Okay, because we're about to see the first appearance of Sabretooth.
And the X-Men, kind of.
Yeah. I will say, I do like that they don't waste a lot of time on explaining Sabretooth and Wolverine in this movie. But they hate each other. The end.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't matter... It's unimportant. They're there to fight each other. The end.
No, I don't know. I mean, I do like that. I like the fact. But then again, I'm also the kind of guy who does think that so much has been made out of their the Sabretooth-Wolverine dynamic that now it's just this impossible web of coincidences and stuff that it's just too much.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's absurd at this point in the comics. It's literally like, well, back when I was a zygote, you were a zygote, and somehow my DNA was emitted a radiation that caused the other to, you know, like, it's ridiculous.
I think you're my brother's father's cousin's nephew's uncle who then, but not really, and that was retconned, and maybe it was a dream, but we worked together in the same government task force, which maybe it was Canadian, but then people forget that I was Canadian, so it was actually American, because if it's shadowing government, it has to be American, and I don't... But there's a German guy, too. I don't... And it's just almost better like, no, they just don't like each other. Why? Because fuck you. That's why.
Yeah, because that's how it is.
Yeah, we're 17 minutes into the movie, and I feel like we've already been watching Wolverine for half an hour.
He's only been on screen for like 4 minutes.
But they never take him off again.
I know, you are correct. All of the X-Men movies that are made, that exist, are Wolverine movies. Like, he is the main character. That's the way it is.
I'm
not even gonna debate it with you because it's true.
Like, right now, I feel I should be drinking. I kind of do. Like, I kind of want to just get some whiskey and watch X-Men and just sob about, like, why isn't there more Cyclops? There needs to be more. Oop, tree, trash, crack. Oh, Wolverine flying through. Oh, oh. And, yeah, but that's what's so frustrating is because when they do stuff like this, it is like, wow, that's awesome. Wolverine just going head first out of a windshield and starting to slowly get up, and he looks broken right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is. Well, maybe not broken because metal bones, but he's at least torn ligaments and things are bent the way they shouldn't. And Hugh Jackman does such a great job of just standing up and looking like, I'm fucked up.
Yeah. It's a nice, clean way to show his powers a little bit better.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, again, this is just one of the things they get right. I don't know why Rogue can't figure out how to get out of a seatbelt.
She's being damseled. It's weak screenwriting.
It is.
There's no reason. Yeah, whenever that happens in a movie, like, some girl, like, I can't get my seatbelt off. Like, it's a seatbelt. Like... There's also, like, broken glass right next to her. She could cut it. Like,
yeah. Well, I think this is one of those things.
It only happens so that this next little bit can happen.
It's because Rogue has never been on an airplane and never gotten the seatbelt demonstration.
Oh,
it's Sabretooth. And he's wearing the pelt of something. And as with all trucks, Wolverine has a conveniently placed propane tank. Because he does. But this Sabretooth, he looks great. In just a awful kind of way. You know, he just looks like a mountain man wearing animal skins. Oh, why is it suddenly so windy?
Oh, and no.
It's like there's a really bad wig blowing snow at people. You know, watching this movie, one of the cool things about it is the memories, but also just kind of seeing how far superhero effects have come.
Yeah.
You know, because when this happened, like, Sabretooth jumping out of the way was awesome. And here, it's something. I don't know what it is. Like, I can't say it looks bad, but it just doesn't look real.
It looks fine. Like, it's aged okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
Like, this power level, you'll see now on, like, TV for, like, The Flash or Arrow or that kind of shit.
I mean, because it's... You can tell it was artistically done, not just through the effects, but through the staging of it and the usage of it to make the most of a limited budget, you know?
Or do they want to spend all their budget on that one scene?
Yeah. What they do want is having Magneto's flying marble balls, which I loved watching this movie. Just the like clack, clack, clack thing going on. It's just Magneto being Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
It's a detail piece that I just liked.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm not sure why Sabretooth stole Wolverine's necklace. Like, it was like, I hate you so much and I want to kill you. Ooh, jewelry.
I mean, he's a cat. Sometimes they just see something shiny and they gotta grab it.
Maybe they should have kept that up. Like, his cat-like nature. Like, they see, a ball of string. Or, as any Dungeons & Dragons player knows, a dice. Like, there should be, like, a D20... And Sabretooth is just batting it around like, I'm going to mess up your game so much.
They're having a big fight and they just throw out like a cardboard box and he's just got to hop in it. He can't not.
And then he just... Oh, his arms, they're so soft. Because we just get Famke Janssen suddenly just stroking Wolverine the way doctors do when patients are asleep. We just give him a slight caress. Like, no, this is for science.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn about this scene, you know, where she uses her psychic powers to pick up the little syringe and then inject him.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of like that, where they do something really simple with their powers to show what their powers do.
Yeah.
But also, I'm like, that's it? That's how we know that she's a telekinetic? That she just... Because she could have just, like, reached over with her hand and gotten it.
I think that's why it doesn't work, is because Famke Janssen, she seems to be too old in this movie to still be learning her powers.
Yeah.
Like if it was like a 17-year-old doing that same maneuver of let me pick it up and pull it towards me and I did it. It's like, okay, sure, it's someone still learning.
Yeah.
But here this is
been like, you know, current day, you know, Emma Stone doing that. She played Gwen Stacy.
Yeah. See, I went Emma Frost and I just if it had been Emma Stone doing that or Amazing Spider-Man 1 Emma Stone doing that, it would have been okay. Because you could argue, oh, she's a teenager.
It also makes the whole her and Scott plot in these movies weird because he seems so much obviously younger than her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what really makes these... we'll get to that. The whole just weirdness of the Scott thing. Because right now we have, James Marsden, he's been in like 5 seconds of the movie. I can't say he did a bad job because he's just not in it enough.
Yeah.
But now we have Wolverine sneaking around the X Mansion, which has lots of really breakable furniture. That, I don't know, they should have just. And oh, look, there's a kid with blue hair. That means he's a mutant.
Yeah.
Because I've never seen a high schooler with blue hair. But it's nice. It's okay. Sure. Whatever.
They do a lot more of that in the second movie, showing the kids actually doing things and obviously being actual characters from the comics.
Yeah. And here, I don't know if it was a budget thing, if it was an idea thing, but like our Hey Look, It's Jubilee is, it's an Asian girl with a yellow jacket and hoop earrings, which, I mean, sure, good thing. You know? It would have been nice to have actually had her do something, though, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and that girl caused all sorts of contention when they cast Ellen Page as Kitty Pryde in the second movie.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, what? Do you have two? Do you have two girls who can go through walls? What are you doing?
Do you think a character with one line won't cause confusion by being recast in the second movie?
Mm-hmm.
Because reasons?
Right.
Because, I mean, that's the only scene this rogue appears in, right?
Or, you know, Shadowcat?
The Shadowcat, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Halle Berry.
Yeah. She's never good. I'm going to say that. In all the movies. In all the X-Men. No, all the movies.
In any movie ever?
No, all the X-Men movies.
Yeah.
There's movies where she's okay, but there is never a badass Storm moment. And I think that's a fucking shame. Because Storm is badass.
Storm is badass. But we never get it. Like, she almost just feels... She doesn't feel like Storm. She feels like a really popular girl in high school, if that makes sense. Like, she feels like the in-click just kind of strolling through the role.
Yeah.
Or am I talking out my butt? And this is how nitpicky I was when this movie first came out, and I still kind of stand by it. Cyclops should always be immaculately shaved.
Only you care about this, Brent.
No, it's true, but it's just one of those little character things of, like, he is... That's who Cyclops... Cyclops doesn't have the little bit of, like, look, I'm a late 90s rebel with my little bit of...
No, I agree. For the character, like, he is the Boy Scout. He's, you know... He's the older brother that wants dad's love and needs to be perfect. So
yeah.
I agree with that.
I mean,
but no one cares but you. Like no one.
No, you're cares. Right. You're right. Especially not the director.
Are you going to start talking about his mastery of spatial physics
geometry?
Now.
Second... It's spatial geometry, you jerk.
Sorry.
Don't.
Geometry that he's a master of.
It's very clear in the comics up through, I think, 93. Like... I'm not sure if it was Cockrum or Smith or one of those early artists. You could just tell they loved drawing angles of when Cyclops was shooting his blast. Okay, I gotta pause my rant just to point out, Storm is teaching about the Roman Empire. Now, I'm sure Storm knows lots of stuff, but maybe that's the failing of the X-Men universe, is you've got just like random people like, topics. I'm going to teach you about ancient history. You're getting a quality education here, because if there's one thing superheroes know, it's ancient history.
Huh. They recast Pyro. I actually never noticed that.
But did they?
Yeah, that kid playing Pyro in this movie is not the same kid from the second movie.
Well, I mean, why would you notice Pyro getting recast when, you know, what's her face? Shadowcat got recast. That got all the
buzz. I actually didn't even remember that Pyro was in this first movie. So there's that.
Hey, I'm Cyclops. I teach about motorcycles because motorcycles.
Yeah, Cyclops is the shop teacher.
I like the idea. Like, that's the curriculum: Roman history and motorcycles.
You never know what's going to come up when you're battling evil.
Personally, I think those are the only two classes they have. That's it. Did you ever watch the X-Men Evolution cartoon?
Maybe once or twice. Not regularly or anything.
I really enjoyed it. And one of the things that I thought I wouldn't like, but ended up did liking, is the mutants who live... I wonder who teaches animal husbandry. Sorry, I just saw a girl, like, painting, obviously, a model horse. Like, a horse that is not moving at all. And she's just, I'm brushing the horse. But X-Men Evolution, it took the kids living in the X-Mansion, but they actually attended public high school.
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
So it was, like, a weird, like, not quite a boarding school, but a boarding house where they got their education somewhere else. And the X-Men was kind of like an extracurricular type thing.
Huh.
And it was a weird little, like, detail, but it allowed them to kind of mix up with regular people and the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants in the school environment, gave them secret identities. But it also did kind of answer that question of, what exactly are these people learning? Like, how to shoot down aliens? You know, not really a... something the government wants kids to know.
Uh-huh.
And here we have the introduction of another blue mutant, because there's lots of them.
Yes. Some would say the most powerful blue mutant.
Yes. For she has the power to move her heart.
She is awesome in these movies, though.
She is. She is. I wonder if they're, like, how they kind of drew the line of, like, why they chose certain characters. Like, no, we're going to develop, we're going to make sure Mystique comes off as awesome. We want Mystique to really be, featured-wise, the second most cool character in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas all the other X-Men are just kind of there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she's the heavy, like, she of the villains, like, she's the second in command to the main villain.
Yeah, she's
how much
effective.
Of it came down to just the ones that Bryan Singer liked, but also came down to the people they knew they had attached to star in the movie.
Mm. You think? Because, I mean, who would say, like, I mean, she does a great job in this, but who would say Rebecca Romijn Stamos, painted blue? That's an option we can't waste. We gotta have lots of blue Romijn Stamos.
Some wise person.
Yeah. And then here we have another... Jean Grey examining Wolverine with apparently a great big Commodore computer. Are we going to play Oregon Trail later? Don't you know you died of dysentery? It's been a while since I've had a scan or anything like that. I don't remember. See, this is one of those weird arguments about Wolverine that kind of comes up, and you can gloss over when a comic, but when they have x-rays like this, it kind of goes, which is, how does he bend his wrists?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's...
The ligaments inside the bones, how they...
Well, it's just, I mean, we have a huge close-up of the claws in his arm, and they go basically from the middle of his forearm to, the tips of his knuckles. And if you have unbreakable adamantium rods going through your arm, how do you then bend your wrist?
Yeah, I don't know. That's one of those, where did Spider-Man get his costume questions that I don't...
Sewed it. Done. End.
Yeah. I don't lose sleep over, whatever.
Well, you know, I mean, seeing as how we can't really add any background information, I like Toad in this. I like Toad.
Yeah, Toad's fun. I like Ray Park, though.
Yeah.
This is when he was getting lots of work after Phantom Menace. He was just in every movie in one way or another. Awesome.
Now, and I think this was actually the first time the tongue of Toad appeared. I don't remember it being... Just what exactly are you doing, Mr. Adams?
Oh, my dog came by and I pat him. Uh-huh.
I use that excuse. Just a little bit too much Ray Park love. Had to release the demons.
You know, a lot to deal with.
Okay, and this is the part of the movie where we start, where I feel it really starts falling apart.
Yeah, once Magneto's plot starts being revealed, I'm like, what?
Yeah, it just doesn't, I mean, and this is a small quibble as well, but even seeing Magneto showing up with his kind of faux military sweater, it's a small little detail, but I kind of feel with the shoulder insignia, which I guess maybe that's where he buttons his cape.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but it just kind of seems a little bit too... You know, when our first shots of this character are of someone being oppressed by military and soldiers and having his whole family eliminated, then having him be like, I will dress up like a pretend soldier boy. It just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a nitpicky detail, especially when compared to, what are you going to do, Magneto? I'm going to turn people into mutants that possibly explode to show them that mutants are people. Wait, what? What is this?
Yeah. It's not a good plan. It's a bad plan.
I don't think I've ever quite figured out what this plan was supposed to accomplish other than magic.
Now they'll understand. Now they'll see. Also, I was like, who built this machine? This magnet-powered mutant ray thing.
Yeah.
And why did they do that?
Yeah, and did it not have any effect on... I guess it doesn't affect mutants. It only affects humans.
Mm-hmm.
And again, here we are, we flash back after a glimpse of Magneto's death egg of Famke Janssen show up, Jean Grey showing Logan their room, and they're making bedroom eyes at each other and slightly flirting, and, he's being a bad boy and she's being Jean Grey.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good scene. It just reeks of sexual tension. Or maybe that's just because, how can you be that close to Hugh Grant? Hugh Jackman.
Well, it's Something you want to talk about, Brett? Something you're just now realizing?
I think I love Hugh Grant. I think I'm not gonna walk this back. It was a mess
just
up.
Just be honest about it.
He's just so foppish. But now that I've made that mistake, I do kind of want to see a movie where Hugh Grant is playing Wolverine. I'm the best of what I do. Well, it's not very nice. But we have the little scene with Wolverine and Jean Grey, and now we have Cyclops and Wolverine.
Bristle,
my penis is big. No, my penis is big. And in the original version of the movie, I think the extended one added stuff in, we never actually got scenes of Jean and Scott together. So we just kind of have the only thing that we get that kind of says, oh no, these two are a couple, is Scott being like, I love her and she loves me. Don't you get it? I'm not a crazy man who's obsessed. I'm in love. I'm in love, I tell you, love. Love me. And it's just no wonder no one likes Cyclops anymore, because Bryan Singer basically made him a stalker.
He does that. Remember Superman?
He does. Yeah. Superman, stalker, Cyclops.
You follow them around and you watch them. And if anyone tries to take them away, you destroy them.
Oh man. What I'm getting is the sense that Bryan Singer just hasn't had a good relationship in a while.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say.
Like, what do you mean? Is it love just standing outside someone's window staring? You know. So I remember this being a really shocking scene. Wolverine just stabbed Rogue. Why Rogue was stalking into Hugh Jackman's room in the middle of the night wearing only pajamas.
Yeah, how she heard him? Lots of questions.
Yeah, it's kind of... Well, I mean, does this relate to the Cyclops question of this is what love is? Love is staring at someone while they sleep in an obsessive fashion. And I remember seeing this and going like, those are weird pajamas she has. Like, I'm just going to have my shoulder blades exposed so you can see the mutant powers going on.
Yeah, did she bring the weird 1920s nightdress from home? Or do they already have some there?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's standard uniform. Here at the Xavier School, women will dress like ladies, not the sluts they are today! I am Professor Xavier, and you're all dirty, dirty teenagers!
He has strong feelings about that. Strong feelings.
I don't know, Professor Xavier, he's got weird, weird ideas about night clothes. I like. And now we have a sweaty Senator Kelly, looking sweaty, with no night clothes. By the way, it's the middle of the night, no pajamas.
Yeah, let's update everyone on whether people have night clothes for the rest of the week. They're not wearing their pajamas. They're wearing normal clothes.
This
was a cool moment for when he tries to squeeze through the bars.
Yeah.
Because I remember being like, what?
Yeah. And as a moment, this is great. Like, because it looks creepy as heck. And it's like, what's going on here? And Magneto walking across the bridge of...
Yeah, that's great.
It's like a sewer, but it's at the top of a mountain. I don't know...
Yeah, where is his lair? What is this place they are at?
It's like on an island.
He's wearing his nightclothes.
You know,
I don't know if you noticed, he's wearing like a nightclothes sort of tunic.
He is. After the time he and Professor X spent together, they learned this is what unless you want to come across as a dirty, dirty teenager, you wear proper pajamas. It's the one point Xavier and Linsher agree on. Night clothes make the man.
Yeah, without his furry pelt, Sabretooth has definitely got a Ron Perlman Beauty and the Beast thing happening.
Yeah. I think, you know what I'm starting to think? Sabretooth, he's just constantly, like, on his way. He's trying to get to a Ren Fair for the weekend. And he's like, I'm going to go
up with society for creative anachronisms.
And Magneto's like, no, I need you to go to Alaska to go pick up someone. But
I don't have time for your LARPs, Sabretooth.
Oh, no, I'm locked in a cage. There's no way. I was going to do the Scottish games where I throw the tree trunk at something.
Oh, is the caber toss?
Yeah. Was that supposed to be like a Jaws riff earlier? When it's just when you thought it was time to safe to go to the beach, you have creepy Gill Man.
The scene is very unsettling.
It is, because he's naked right now. And oh, hey, check it out, Stan Lee! So we had a naked Senator Kelly just showing up on the beach, and now we flash to teenagers. I wish I could be clever enough to make a through line of naked man on a beach to blossoming teen love, but I just can't get the bat off my shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this whole plot to involve Rogue is so convoluted. They bend the whole script. Like, they send Mystique to pretend to be Bobby to tell her, like, never hurt a mutant. I can't believe you hurt a mutant. You gotta run away.
And then it's just the whole kind of thing of, like, wait, how... I mean, this is a whole school. How do you even know she knows this guy? Like, what if she thought, like, oh, this Bobby guy, that's a jerk.
Yeah, and why wouldn't they just kidnap her? Like, what is the advantage to... Maybe she'll run away, maybe she'll commit suicide. Like, you know, like...
Yeah.
You have no way to control what she's gonna do.
I mean, I think it would have been a better thing if you just had, like, hey, little girl, want some ice cream? Like, that would have been a bit simpler. You know, like, oh, hey, check it out, Rogue. They're having a glove sale at Gloves R Us. You can go buy some gloves. And Wolverine feels protective over someone for the first time ever.
Character development or something.
Yeah. You know. Which, you know, this does kind of make you wonder. Like, everything we've learned so far about Wolverine, or everything the X-Men have learned about Wolverine, shows... He has a really unstable past, he's psychically damaged, and he's a wild card person. And then they're like, hey, do you want to know all our secrets?
Hey, come into Cerebro.
Dude, check it out. This might, you probably need to know how to do this, seeing as how you're a guy with metal claws.
Yeah, let's tell you everything. I'll show you where everything is.
And if you ever want to detonate the mansion by any chance, here's the button you push.
Yeah, we don't even put a safety on it. You just push it. Yeah. You want.
Well, actually, the password is password. I mean, really.
Yeah. I mean, with fair, if you need to blow up the mansion, you don't want to be trying to remember a password. You need to be able to blow that mansion up right away.
Yeah, and it's just... And the fact that all the other X-Men are like, whoa, 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 we don't go into the Cerebro room. We don't... Oh, Wolverine, yeah, go ahead. It's just that, like, I get the fact that he's the point of view character. You know, mm-hmm. to help us as the audience understand what's going on. But it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I'm kind of realizing now, rewatching this movie, that the whole movie, Jean basically spends dogging on herself. She's like, well, I kind of suck. I can't really do much.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at it. Like, all of her scenes, at some point, she devalues herself.
Yeah. Well, because that's how Wolverine can support her. It's... What would be that version of damseling? Like, I don't know.
I value I don't know. You. That means you have value. Look.
One day we'll show you how valuable you are.
Yeah. Have they done that yet? I can't remember. I don't know.
I mean, eventually she's super powerful, the second one, but yeah.
And it's all about Wolverine. I'm the reason she took off. It's me, mm-hmm. Wolverine. She was jealous of my not quite mutton chops in this movie.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that is interesting. Let's talk about Wolverine's hair. Because I feel in this one, compared to the recent Wolverine movies, his coif has gotten a little less ridiculous looking in recent movies. Like, it's somehow more under control, or it just looks more natural somehow. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with this, because, you know, it looks like Wolverine in the thing, in the comics. But they've also gone crazier with his mutton chops. It's like they toned in the top of his head and just said, nah, mutton chops, go crazy with them. And here he just looks like, you know, weird stubble, where he kind of shaved his upper lip a little bit.
Yeah.
That is my my treatise on his hair.
You've thought a lot about this.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, there's really not much else, because if I try and think about Magneto's plot, it just descends into madness.
Yeah, you gotta focus on the hair. Yeah. Focus on that hair.
Yeah.
let's all think about that.
And for 10 seconds. Hair.
Nina's hair. Oh, there's two Bobbies! What's going on?
Whoa.
Oh, this plot is so great.
Yeah, and this is one of those costumes that I never quite liked. The Cyclops, stealth mode Cyclops costume.
Yeah, he's wearing his baseball cap and a coat.
Because, you know, that doesn't seem strange at all. You know, it's a good thing that the X-Men don't have any cameras on their Cerebro machine, or that, you know, she's filling it full of ink now.
Like a super science device that I've heard of called a padlock.
Yeah. whoa, back up.
You know, with a key?
Now, do you know what she just put some ooze in the Cerebro?
It looks bad. It's black. That probably means it's bad.
I think whoever uses it next time will turn into a giant turtle. A teenage, which like this movie is so, for all its good points, it's just sometimes so on the nose, because we literally just the last scene was going like, this is my supercomputer, boy, I sure hope nothing bad happens to my super mutant finding computer, because that would really, really make things hard for us and our supercomputer. And then we have Mystique coming in and going like, I will go to the supercomputer. It's, man, good thing you guys wedged that exposition in there just in time. That was good. I mean, because, you know, there's the Chekhov's gun rule, but this is almost like, it's just so immediate. Hey, check it out. Here's a gun. Bam!
Like, oh. Man, I hope nobody goes in there. Come back and get out of there!
it's just too immediate. Like, I'm just thinking of what else could happen. Oh, yeah, because here, I'll take care of you, and I'll make sure that no one kidnaps you. No one will absolutely kidnap you while I'm watching, says the Wolverine. I feel we should hit our stopwatches now to see how long it takes for her to get kidnapped.
It's got to be under, like, 4 minutes.
Yeah. We're at 52 minutes now into the movie. We'll find out. I like the random extra station manager just smiling and nodding. Like, I can't have a line here because then they'd have to pay me. Or give me a SAG card.
He's more committed to his role than Halle Berry is.
It's true. Which is a shame. Like, give the station attendant a line. Come on. And here we have... Oh no, blasters! Like... I mean, it's good that we get to see... Is Sabretooth gonna have to choke a... Wait a minute. Yeah, this whole fight scene... It's not even a fight scene, it's just like a... It's like a Lemony Snicket series of unfortunate events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's never seems to be any real build or flow to this. Like, I don't even know what those characters are there for.
Yeah.
They're there to...
It's more like, I manifest my power. I manifest my power. Fight over.
Good thing our powers have manifested.
Yeah, and it's also like, why did Magneto send his minions if he was going anyway?
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't, like, he is so on a different scale of power to them. Like, were they just there to, like, did he know that the X-Men were coming, so he wanted them to keep Storm and Cyclops busy? Like...
Yeah. And, I mean, we got the fact that it suddenly went dark because Storm summoned a storm, but how far away is this area where it's still dark?
Yeah.
Because wasn't it day just a moment ago?
No, it was after dark. It was after dark. Yeah, because remember when he was driving the motorcycle, it was dark.
Okay.
It was like dusk. Yeah. Blue dusk.
Yeah, and then we have Magneto, whose plot is to kill everyone. And he has Wolverine at his mercy. And why does he let Wolverine away? Like, I don't...
Because he's our main character, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot.
Okay, and stop your clock.
Oh, ooh! Just before minute 55, so 3 minutes. Less than 3 minutes went from, I will protect you, and then he goes out to the train station.
No one will ever lay a hand on you 3 minutes later.
Yeah, and then I like the fact that Magneto, who can fly, he doesn't just leave. He's not like, bye, see you guys later. He's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go out the front door of this train exit. Like, I'm leaving the train station.
I agree, but I love this scene.
Oh, no, it's a great scene.
Do you want to, like, pause after this scene?
Sure.
With
the
guns?
And we'll end the episode after this with the guns.
Because this, like, the first time I saw this, like, I had never seen this done, like, in the comic or anywhere else. I was like, this is the coolest use of magnetism powers I've ever seen. This is great.
It is really good.
Having Charles do this was awesome. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. This is everything the fight before was not.
It really is. And the fact that
both
it's...
their powers in creative, smart ways and trying to trump the other.
Yeah. It's a chess match. It went from just like, powers, rah! To like, just, you know, it's two old pros waging off. And it's so much tenser than this, pretty much any scene that comes before it and after it, really. Like, this is the best conflict in the movie right here.
Yeah, I love this moment very much.
And what's so great about it is the powers. There's, other than the flipping
guns.
He uses
Toad. Like, he grabs Toad. Like, he doesn't just give up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, in this moment with the bullet, like, how it escalates. Like, mm-hmm. I love it.
And just the fact that there's nothing really flashy about the power usage here.
Mm-hmm. It's very simple, but it's very effective.
Mm-hmm. And it's just...
And just his delivery of that, I don't think I can stop them all. You know, like, he's not lying. Like, he's not bluffing. He's like, this is
and
hard for him.
Resignation on Patrick Stewart. Like, this is just where you have the strength of the actors really selling the point of the scene.
Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of the superhero movies of this era kind of missed. Like, the ability to sell these moments.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, so, and just yeah. And you know, it does not surprise me that, I mean, admittedly, I'm more familiar with what Patrick Stewart was doing around this era than I was with you know, Ian McKellen. But the fact that you had freaking Picard knowing how to sell this just craziness does not come as a shock. I mean, I see four lights.
Yeah. So good. That, and that extra sitting there touching his head.
Yep, yep. Well, this is a good place for us to pause. We've got about an hour left in the movie. Wolverine was just taking a shower, you know, because that's what you do.
After that experience.
After that experience.
After breaking your 3-minute promise.
Dude, I mean, really. I held that promise for a whole 3 minutes.
Okay, so if you were watching, you're listening to the podcast and watching the movie, now's a good time to stretch your legs. Get another drink. Make some more popcorn. And we'll see you in a few minutes.
Yeah, we'll see you in a few minutes. Or you know, a week, whichever. Stretch your legs for a week. Or hopefully you're just downloading all of my episodes and watching them through, and you're like, man, this X-Men commentary is totally riveting and not pointless because these guys have no industry cred whatsoever. It's just two guys talking about X-Men. But you know what? You know what? I'm gonna go out here. I'm gonna go out here, and even though I've only been doing various podcasts for a year, and I do listen to some of those industry insiders, I got a chip on my shoulder. Because damn it. Yeah, because podcasting. I mean, isn't this supposed to be like the independent generation, or, you know, the voice for people with no voices or whatnot? Which is when it's like, hey, what's up? We actually are Hollywood. It's kind of like, ah. I don't know. Maybe I'll cut that. I don't know. But it's just kind of one of those things of like, man, you know, this is fans for fans.
Yeah, man.
Maybe I should have emailed Brian Singer and just said, like, hey, Bry, because that's what I would call him if he let me.
I call him Bry Dog.
Yo, Bry Dog, we're going to talk about X-Men. you want to hop on our Skype? Tell us what you meant by that. if for some reason Brian Singer reaches out to me from now to when we record the next episode, which I guess will be after Derek runs some errands, then we'll include him and he can tell us stuff. I really don't know. It's not going to happen anyway, so who cares? I'm going to end the suspense. Brian Singer will not appear on the next episode.
Not with that attitude.
Okay, bye, Derek.
Bye, Brent.
Bye.